Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. This is your host, Stone Payton, and joining me in the studio this morning is my good buddy and co-host, Lee Cantor. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Stone. How was your post-Super Bowl hangover coming along?
Pretty well. Actually, no alcohol involved, but I did hang on the couch, eat some of Holly's famous chicken salad, and I watched the Giants pull it out. Did you predict that? Did you think that was going to be what would happen?
I was rooting for the Giants.
You were rooting? What do you got against Brady?
I hate the Patriots.
We don't use words like hate here in the High Velocity Radio studio.
I'm a Dolphin fan.
I know you are. I know you are. So this morning, we have a great show in front of us. A little bit later in the program, we are going to hear from two more nominees from the Atlanta's Best Connector series that we've been doing. This has been a lot of fun. It's been amazing to me, the response that we've gotten from the marketplace of people nominating the ones that they feel like are doing a particularly good job of connecting other people. Were you surprised at all by this, or you knew it was going to unfold like this?
No, not at all. I mean, we thought we'd get a handful of people, but we ended up with, 60, 70 nominees. It was crazy.
Like in no time, very quickly. So how are we going to make money off that? Or are we? We're just going to have
fun. We'll ask one of our guests later.
There you go.
They're experts.
With the brain power in this room, we should be able to monetize this whole connector
thing. I would hope so by the end of the show.
But first up on the High Velocity Radio Show this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce to you a lady who is an attorney with Fisher and Phillips, Miss Terry Stewart. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. We are delighted to have you. You're not the first attorney that we've had in the studio from Fisher and Phillips. We've had the pleasure of talking with Mr. Sullivan, who handles some of the marketing over there.
Yes.
And I may pronounce the last name wrong. Folk or Falk?
Yes, Ed Falk. He's the former head of OSHA and is now with our firm. Yes.
Yeah, he was a very educated, articulate man. And so we thoroughly enjoyed that interview. But you know what? His 15 minutes of fame are over. That's gone. We're going to talk to Terry. Tell us a little bit about your practice and what this whole arena of labor and employment law is all about.
Okay. Well, specifically, I do preventative advice and counseling as well as litigation. That's my subspecialty. Fisher & Phillips is a labor and employment boutique. And while that sounds small, it's actually getting quite large. I think we're up to 26 offices across the country. But what makes us a boutique is that we specialize in just labor and employment law on behalf of the employer. And so within this larger definition of labor and employment law, most of us specialize in a particular area. And preventative advice and counseling, meaning if an employer has a problem on the front end or a situation that they need help resolving prior to litigation, they just give me a call, we work through it. And then also if it actually has to result in litigation, such as single plaintiff or a class action, then I'm there too, basically anywhere in the process. Labor and employment generally is a type of law, and we represent just employers. Labor is the union side of labor and employment law. I think that's what people are most familiar with if you have union organizing or union activity. But employment law may even be the bigger side of it. And there are numerous federal and state laws that regulate what employers can and can't do in the workplace. And it's kind of a complicated legal landscape and numerous ways for an employee to, quote, mess up, employer to, quote, mess up. So that's when they call me or ask me to step in at that point.
So now, when you were younger and you were dreaming one day you'd be an attorney, is this how you pictured it? Employment law, you were aiming your whole career?
Well, it did change a little. I have always had an interest in law. I was just fascinated with the law and orders of the world.
What TV show was the
Law and Order?
And Law and Order.
Yes. And actually, they're one of the few shows that actually have lawyers riding on the staff. So it's not the
employment lawyers?
Well, I doubt it. I doubt it. Criminal, I think. But at least it's somewhat accurate. Some of these shows on TV, you just see like them pull out a piece of paper or a shocking witness at the last minute, which would most often doesn't really happen.
What's the least accurate?
Probably Boston Legal.
Oh, really?
That was man, I love Dean Crane.
Hey, it's exciting, but it's
Dean Crane.
It's an ethical nightmare.
Wow. See, that's breaking news.
Yeah. So I knew I wanted to do law, and I had an affiliation for business and have my undergrad in business. And so I thought corporate law was the next step for me. But when I got
What does corporate law entail in your mind? What did you think you'd be doing?
Securities, shareholders, stock purchase, right.
And that
contracts.
Sounds interesting to you.
Well, at first.
Yeah.
Well, for only a minute. You think it's going to be all glitz and glamour, and then you realize
really?
How.
You would think that's all glitz and glamour.
then you realize exactly how boring that actually is. And so labor and employment law is like corporate law with all the exciting facts. No day is the same. Everything that happens at life happens at work. Mm-hmm. And so it's still on the business side of things, but it is just really exciting. I have a war chest of stories and probably not to be shared on the radio, so don't ask.
Well, I love the idea of preventive. You've mm-hmm. used that word a couple of times, that you help people like Lee and I keep us from shooting ourselves in the backside. What are some of the kinds of mistakes that a growing company might make if they don't have the benefit of your counsel?
So you're looking for free advice?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, very good. Whenever I have a lunch or something like this, I was like, ask away. This is your chance of free advice. There are several things. To give you an example, I call it the Bermuda Triangle or the leave triangle. And that is the interaction between workers' compensation, the ADA or the Americans with Disabilities Act, and the Family Medical Leave Act. You have all these different laws, some state and some federal, requiring what leave you have to give, what modified work duties you have to give, and it's absolutely a nightmare. For one, if you have somebody on FMLA protected leave, and you either have to get it right or don't, or you have a claim. So it's like strict liability. If you were on the road driving around and you hit somebody, you were either following too close or you weren't, and you're going to get the ticket. And there's numerous ways that you can mess that up, because you can take intermittent leave, which is, you know, I need an hour here or an hour there, or whole chunks of time. And so after that expires, you may have a duty under the Americans with Disabilities Act to continue the leave, or possibly formulate some type of reasonable accommodation for an employee. So there's lots of little pitfalls. So sometimes I'll be dealing with an employer on one employee for, you know, upwards of 6 months, just so we make sure that we've
wow.
dotted all our I's and T's. Yeah,
man, that is... That's brutal.
So if you have a pregnant lady in a wheelchair get hurt in the studio,
you're in trouble.
We got to call Terry and get her on the job quick, right?
Exactly.
So so when you engage with a new client, it must be overwhelming. Their head must explode.
Well, it kind of depends on the size of the employers. We have everything from like a brand new startup, a sole practitioner, kind of what they need to do to get off the ground to avoid liability and things like that, all the way up through, you know, huge mega corporations, which have essentially a whole in-house law firm that, you know, has its own subspecialty. And in a case like that, we wouldn't do as much preventative advice and counseling as we would just managing the sheer amount of litigation
right.
that can be generated with 5,000 employees or so.
Now, what's your sweet spot?
What do you mean?
Like the size of company?
For me personally, I don't have a size. I just have an area. And so, you know, I like to see helping a startup kind of formulate and move all the way up and grow. And you can see their interests change over time, you know, from HR training to when they're HR training or training their supervisors, all the way until they have a huge team where they have very intricate systems and processes and things like that.
So email, Facebook, this must add a whole new dimension. This, talk about job security for your line of work. Are people
you
getting
want
a
more
lot of
social media, right? Invent more of that.
More
please, we need more evidence in our cases. I like to say that what happens in Vegas stays on Facebook, Twitter, email, and the like. And the fact is that now that all this social media is out there, the amount of content that's generated on a daily basis that can relate to your claims is shocking. Because whereas people would have never written a letter and said the things that they say on Facebook, they have no problem just sending a tweet, without regard to how this may look later.
Right.
For instance, if you have like a Title VII claim, we had...
What's Title VII?
Title VII is the federal law that prohibits discrimination on the basis of race, religion, national origin, the ones that you usually hear. And so we had a supervisor just go on Facebook and say something like, what is it with women these days? They have more issues than a Jerry Springer show.
Ouch.
Well, that was exhibit one to the deposition. And
now, even though Facebook is kind of a closed environment, like that's not Google searchable.
Well, it depends on if they're public or private, their profile.
Uh-huh.
As an attorney, we can't go on and create, or an employer for that matter, can't engage in like fake passwords, or I'm going to set up an email account just to spy on our employees. Because that is a violation of the Stored Communications Act. Once again, another law for the employers to violate without realizing it. But, there's other issues too. For instance, it's a reality. One of my favorite clients actually doesn't have email at all, which makes it amazing and cheap to litigate a case. Because quite frankly, the having someone like an attorney or a paralegal review those thousands of emails or even some subset is... extremely costly.
Right.
But if a plaintiff or an employee has taken a huge zip drive of all their emails before they left or right before they were discharged, for instance, then you have to review them because you don't know what's going to be, in a deposition or in a trial if you don't.
Are you allowed to delete them?
Yes, over time. But I guess the answer to that is...
No one does?
Well, that's true, too. What companies should have is a good document retention policy. And what that entails is just some type of program where I'm not going to keep emails for 20 years or because that'll be 20 years worth of data that we have
right.
to search. However, if you get notice of a lawsuit or some type of claim that could result as a result of something going on at work, then the federal rules do require you to stop that deletion process. That basically came about in the wake of Enron when people were just shredding things left and right. So now there's an obligation to preserve evidence. So you have to do what's called a litigation hold or stop that deletion just with respect to the key people or the key time frame. But otherwise, delete, as long as it's non-intentional and it's just a regular scheduled program
right.
and you have some way to stop it at some point.
That sounds like good advice to me.
Every 24 hours.
So this 40 under 40 thing, it's
yes.
one of the ways that you came on our radar. Tell us a little bit about that process. Is that something that you consciously went after, or how does that work?
Well, I was lucky enough to be nominated for the award from a client. And I did receive notice that they were nominating me, which I was flattered and even more surprised to see that I was selected for the award. It was an amazing event. And what 40 Under 40 is with the Atlanta Business Chronicle is they just try to select individuals that have a strong a portion of their life devoted to business as well as the community. So they're kind of looking for a work plus from what I can tell. And so I think it was just a combination of the volunteer nonprofit things that I do, as well as the work that I've done with Fisher & Phillips. I've got a couple rewards for super lawyers, which is like supposed to be the top 2% or so of lawyers in the state and in the country.
How do they judge that?
It's kind of a complicated network of peer interviews, peer nominations, client interviews, and you can't like self-promote. You could never get it if you nominated yourself.
If you run an ad in the back of the Yellow Pages? Can you make it?
It's possible if you've drummed up some good support or some good legal work as a result of that advertisement. So,
What are some of the nonprofits you work? What's your work with nonprofits?
Well, I work with a nonprofit called Moving in the Spirit. I have an unusual kind of background for being an attorney. I was a competitive dancer all my life. I danced and captained the dance team for the University of Georgia. And then also cheered for the Falcons for 1 year. And as a result of that, I've tried to stay involved in dance-related organizations. So through my lead class this year, which is a division of Leadership Atlanta, I got involved with a nonprofit called Moving in the Spirit. And basically, it's to help inner-city children or children with not as much access to mentors or peer-related success, to expose them to a new dance form or somewhere to devote their energy. But in the meantime, it's not just about actually learning to dance. They choreograph their own pieces with social injustice-type themes. They go into other inner-city locations and dance for the other kids. And it's a way to promote them and expose them to the world, because they travel, to commitment, and then to ultimately get them to succeed in school.
I think that's terrific. And this is called Moving in the Spirit?
Moving in the Spirit.
Now, how can our listeners learn more about those folks? Is there a website or something?
Sure. There's Moving in the Spirit has a website. If you just pull it up and Google it, there's an amazing video. And there was actually J.D. Scott, who's a photographer in the Atlanta area, had a huge exhibition exhibit of these dancers that he photographed for Hartsfield Jackson. And now those photographs have been removed. They're huge. There are upwards of 16 of them, and they're 5 feet tall, to see the transition of the kids from basically their normal life into beautiful dancers. And now they're being placed throughout the city in different locations. So I'll have to let you know where those are.
Is there an alumni group of cheerleader lawyers? How many members are in that group?
Well, there are actually. There were three other attorneys. One was a DA on my team. But you'd be surprised. Atlanta has always focused that they were looking for a businesswoman and not just a career person. They wanted kind of somebody that was well-rounded, because as much of that was being out in the community and speaking with people and with kids as actually game day.
So Lee was joking a little while ago about the Yellow Pages, mm-hmm. and I'm operating under the impression that's probably not how you go to market. But labor law, even having the niche you have, has got to be a fairly competitive arena. How do you go to market? How do you differentiate yourself? How do you meet the people you need to meet to do the work?
Well, a lot of general practice firms have divisions of labor and employment law. But we like to differentiate ourselves, Fisher & Phillips, as we're not just an add-on or a service that's part of a mergers and acquisitions, or if that's your main need for a particular law firm, and then you just happen to focus on this area or be able to service that. For a boutique such as ours, that's what we do all day, all the time. So we believe we offer very good quality and very large depth of knowledge at a very reasonable rate, and often much more reasonable than other firms. In marketing, it's basically just establishing yourself as a good, effective attorney, someone that they would want to handle it, and then just being out in the community, seeing someone with a need and saying, I think you could really benefit for a wage and hour audit. I think some of your people aren't classified correctly, or something along those lines. And once you kind of start a relationship, it can just blossom from there.
So doing good work and genuinely helping people, how's that for a marketing approach? I like it. Before we let you go, let's make sure that our listeners know how to get in touch with you, reach out to Fisher & Phillips, or speak with you personally, and have a substantive conversation about some of these issues that could really be very important to them as they are growing their business, right?
Yes. I am tstewart@laborlawyers.com. Laborlawyers.com is Fisher & Phillips' website. And it has a wealth of information and knowledge, even within that, free booklets, free webinars, upcoming seminars. For instance, we're having one in April where you kind of get a crash course in everything you need to know, or at least be able to spot the issue. My direct dial is 404-240-4247, and I'll be able to help you with anything you need.
Well, it has been an absolute delight having you on the show. Thanks for coming to the studio. It's been a lot of fun. We got to have you back sometime, because there's plenty to talk about, right?
That's exciting. It's never ending. Thank you for having me.
hey, can you hang out with us for a little bit while we visit with our next guest?
Sounds great.
Terrific. Well, Lee, Mike Blake is in the house, and he's no stranger to the Business Radio X family and to coming in the studio. He's with HANW. Welcome back to the studio, Mr. Blake. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. It's good to be behind the microphone. I actually haven't done a podcast in forever, so I kind of forget how these things work.
Well, you look so nervous. You know, you gotta just relax. But no, if anyone is relaxed and comfortable behind the mic, it's Mr. Blake here, I think. Don't you, Lee?
Absolutely. Now, you notice we couldn't say the name of your firm, so you may want to say it. We don't have to pronounce it. We just call it HAW.
Yeah, actually, it takes a first 2 weeks of new employee orientation. Who do you work for? Habif, Arigetti, and Wynn.
Yeah, see, you couldn't get laborlawyers.com, could you?
No, that was already taken.
So he is the director of valuation services. I know that you probably know exactly what that means, Lee, but just for my benefit and for a few of the listeners that might not, what are you out there doing for folks?
Well, my job, bluntly, is to figure out what business stuff is worth, right? When you're going to sell a house or buy a house, if you're smart about it, you typically have it appraised before you put it on the market. I do that for businesses, and I do that for intellectual property. So about well over half of our practice is actually merger and acquisition related, meaning people buying and selling stuff, and they want us to help them price that transaction to make sure that they're not getting ripped off, quite frankly. Another quarter of our practice is testifying in litigation. So people like Terry have the job of arguing who broke the law. My job is to argue what I think the number ought to be. And so I testify in about 2-3 cases a year. And then the rest is sort of a mishmash of the oh-so-exciting realm of audit compliance and tax compliance. And
the glamour.
And the occasional consulting assignment. Although I got a really cool one that's coming up that is actually going to be in Ukraine for this large real estate development. So that's an unusual part of our practice. I don't expect that to be a cornerstone of what we do.
You're going to do valuation work in the Ukraine?
In a manner of speaking, it's a lot more complicated than that, but let's just go with yes.
Yes, really. And how would you come up with the numbers for something in another country?
You got to convert it to rubles.
A Ouija board or a magic 8-ball?
I got a magic 8-ball for Christmas, so I'm looking forward to trying that out.
Now, why do you suppose someone went to the trouble of nominating you for Atlanta's Best Connector? What qualities, traits do you either have or have you convinced other people that you have that would put you in this race, man?
I think it was probably a two-stage failure, actually. The first being that I was nominated in the first place, and then somehow I made it through your filter. You know, you had 70 other people for this thing, and I was the one who came to the cream of the crop. So
it's not a good system.
We're still fine-tuning the process.
Exactly. clearly not fail-safe. So I would speculate that it is largely because of my night job, an outfit called StartupLounge.com. We're a 501c6 nonprofit. We call ourselves venture communists. And the reason we call ourselves that is because we feel that the support system that needs to be out there to help high-growth potential entrepreneurs should be free. And I grew up in Boston, by the way.
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Another reason he shouldn't be here. But
No, I should be here as your easy target, man. You're just going to take pot shots at me all day long. But you know, in Boston, where I grew up, you know, they have a very well-developed venture capital network, right? We're all familiar with Route 128 and sort of the East Coast version of Silicon Valley. And a lot of the networking, a lot of the mentoring, a lot of even, you know, the access to entrepreneurs, I'm sorry, access to investors on behalf of entrepreneurs that we take for granted up in that market, when we came down here, or I came down here, I discovered kind of have somehow been worked into a kind of fee-for-service element. And I think that has for a long time held the Atlanta market back. You know, entrepreneurs basically have 28 cents and a bunch of lint in their pocket, and then asking to pony up another $2,000 to try to pitch to a room full of God knows who, or to pay another couple of grand for a consultant who may or may not actually know what they're doing, that's really tough. And what I discovered is that many entrepreneurial ventures are in fact strangled at birth because of that very reason. So my co-founder Scott Burkett and I said we could either sort of get on the air like you guys do and rant and rave about it and be screaming lunatics, which we do on occasion. Or what we can do is we can simply offer a free superior alternative. So we have a number of events, 3 in Atlanta, 1 in Savannah. We're hopeful to open up in Augusta and Athens by the end of the year this year, where we basically just get a bunch of entrepreneurs and a bunch of investors in a room. We give them name tags. We give them a cash bar. Alcohol is important for these kinds of transactions. a buffet, and lock the doors and let nature take its course. And so that's all about networking. It's all about good old-fashioned shoe leather, helping investors and entrepreneurs meet one another. And we at Startup Lounge try to take a leading role. We're not the only ones who do this, but we try to take a leading role in facilitating those kinds of relationships, those kinds of introductions. So this actually does get back to answering your question, which is Startup Lounge is a big old platform for making those kinds of connections.
So now you just lock them in a room, or do they pitch, or what are the mechanics of what happens when they're locked in this room?
Yeah, they don't pitch. We just give them name tags and sort of shove them into the room and say, here, that person is a millionaire, so go pitch to him or her.
Right.
I'm not a big fan of pitch events because right. It puts a wall between the entrepreneur and the investor. You know, and there are lots of pitch events around town, you know, Startup Riot and Venture Atlanta, Cap Venture Program, so forth. And they're fine as far as they go. But you know, we run a kind of a side activity called Angel Lounge, where it's just a lunch that we provide for angel investors in the community. It's amazing how many millionaires will show up by virtue of a free $18 lunch. Maybe that tells you kind of how they got
to be a millionaire, right?
Exactly. They sort of saved their pennies and their lunch money. So, but actually, our last meeting last week, we asked them, you know, how many of you have actually ever invested in a deal that you saw at a pitch event or even really gotten into a serious discussion? Nobody.
Really?
Yeah. Which surprised me, even though I thought, I mean, I don't like them, but I didn't think I was necessarily right. But then to have 25 high net worth individuals basically saying, yeah, you know, pitch events are kind of nice and cute or something, but we don't actually find deals that way.
But somebody must be finding deals that way. I mean, they happen all over the place. Or you think this is just like a myth?
Look, again, we had 25 people. That's not a statistically significant sample. But you're 0 for 25, so 0 for 25 is 0 for 25, and you can sort of take it for what it's worth. I'm sure somebody has invested in it in that medium at some point, or people would, in fact, stop doing it. But
like in your Startup Lounge, where it's just a bunch of people locked in a room and they're just hanging out, aren't they kind of forced to do a little mini pitch to these people?
No, that's exactly right. Enforced is sometimes exactly the point. You know, we get people that show up to the events and they bring like a booth and some posters and a multimedia presentation. And it starts to look like a little bit of a science fair, except with 35-year-olds.
Right.
It can get kind of creepy, actually, when you think about it. And what happens is the individuals find themselves chained to that booth, right? Because you're hoping people come to you, right? Well, I've never met a successful entrepreneur that has grown their business by simply waiting for the market to come to them.
Right.
But the booth is kind of comforting. So people kind of do that. So what we did is over time, we simply reduced the number of tables available for people to set up shop. So they'd show up, kind of look around, say, oh, they slumped their shoulders and then take their stuff out back to the car. And we will just sort, we will have to take kind of wallflowers and grab them by the hand and just sort of, you know,
shove them towards,
whip them in the middle of the room.
Millionaires.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to network with a millionaire whether you like it or not.
Is money flowing more than maybe 2 or 3 years ago, less? What's been your experience, regardless of how they do get the deals? Is more money flowing right now or less?
We are seeing, that's a great question. We are seeing a renaissance.
You hear that, Lee? That was a great question. One to nothing.
That's one nothing.
But is there a more patronizing thing you can say than that's a great question? Right. I'd love to hear somebody say, what a dumbass question.
Dumb, yeah, really.
I get that occasionally.
But we are seeing a renaissance of early stage angel investing in the Atlanta area. I think it is at least as strong as the late 1990s, if not stronger, and I've got the data to back it up. Just if you read the Atlanta Business Chronicle, new deals are being announced. I can see them being done with our clients at HANW that I can't talk about. I see them being done through Startup Lounge and through Angel Lounge. We estimate through our Angel Lounge group about $3 million were committed to new deals last year. The Atlanta Technology Angels committed another 2.5. venture capital is back. So we are seeing funding at a pace and a level that we have not seen in this town in a long, long time.
Now, at these events, do you guys provide the napkins to work these deals out? Is that where it all happens? That you can just invent a deal on a napkin like you could way back when?
Well, we do provide the napkins, although most people use them for wiping their mouths. But there would be the novel thing about doing a business plan. You know, one of the things about the Atlanta market that is different from what we hear about the glamour markets in Silicon Valley, Route 128 in New York, is it's really hard to get a business plan funded on its own, right? On just an idea. You know, the Silicon Valley model is, hey, I've got this idea and I'd like $1 million to see if it works.
Right.
That's really what it boils down to. That plays badly here in the Atlanta market. And so even to get into one of our startup lounge events, you have to demonstrate that you have at least a product to sell.
So you have to have a product. Yep. You don't have to have sold any.
Nope. Though many have. I mean, it turns out if you have a product, people will buy it. It's hard to buy a product you don't have.
So what's the difference? You mentioned these two terms a minute ago. What is the difference between venture capitalist and angel investor?
How many zeros?
Before I answer this, the distinction is blurred. But the way I define it is, an angel investor is basically a rich person that invests out of their own bank account or out of their own investment account. A venture capitalist is a full-time manager of money. We don't necessarily think of them as managers of money. You know, they don't have Morningstar rated funds and so forth, but a bunch of people give the venture capitalist money to say, look, we don't have the deal flow. We're not smart enough to manage these deals. So we're going to trust you with making these high risk, high growth investments. And so the venture capitalist manages money for other people. And typically, because of the way the economics work, venture capitalists tend to make larger investments. They tend to raise larger funds because they make money on the management fees. So if you have a small fund, small management fee, what's the point? You want a large fund, large management fee, and then potential for larger scale returns.
And so are there books that you have consulted over the years or mentors that you've sort of parked under their wing for a while that have helped you learn this business, whether it be valuation or this business of connecting and connecting other people?
Yes. In valuation and venture capital, there's so many to mention. I'd never get halfway through the list. So I'd almost rather mention nobody than mention a few people and leave several out. There's some gurus in town that I think are just outstanding networkers. They talk about it a lot. They're on the speaking circuit, they're on the writing circuit. There's Bob Littell, who positions himself as a net weaver, and in fact, I would credit him with being the inspiration for Startup Lounge. It's all very much about sort of the pay it forward concept.
Yeah.
I would also credit Ricky Steele, who is with, I believe, an IT staffing firm now. But he wrote a book called The Heart of Networking, which is a terrific read. It doesn't take long to go through. And he delivers this terrific speech called The 7 Habits of Highly Effective Networkers. And when I heard it, I went right back to my office, wrote them on my whiteboard, and they stayed on my whiteboard for about a year and a half.
Oh, that's great.
Probably means I didn't need as large a whiteboard as I had. I probably should have used that space for something else. But he does a great, great job. And third, actually, is a friend and mentor at my own firm, Susan O'Dwyer, who was our director of business development. Before she joined us, she actually wrote or published the PwC Shaking the Money Tree, which is the big study they do on venture capital. Before I joined HANW, the first thing I did when they offered me the job was call her and say, should I take it? And she said, yeah, I should take it. I said, okay. She is just a tremendous networker. And the best example I can find is, you know, we all work long hours. I'll wander up to her office sometimes 7 or 8 because I'm looking at a spreadsheet and I'm just not getting it anymore. So I'll take a walk around the office. She's in her office at 9, 10, 11 at night. And all she's doing is following up on connections that she's made. All she's doing is following up on introductions that she's promised to do.
In other words, it's her that we should have in the studio. Is that what
you're saying? In fact, I nominated her. So what's wrong with you guys? And she's much nicer than I am as well. So
I suspect she's more attractive as well.
Yes, but that's not a high hurdle necessarily. So let's not damn with faint praise.
Now, when you're doing what you do for your day job, how often do you see people being good networkers in the Bob Littell spirit, or do you see them more kind of too self-serving typically? You know, are you following me?
Yeah, no, I follow you. I'm trying to formulate
trying
an
to
answer
nice.
Without getting
without
myself
mentioning
sued.
Names.
Okay. Yeah, exactly.
That's why Terry's here.
Exactly. Do you have a waiver form I can sign here? That'd be great. You know, I can tell you that our firm has 295 people in it, and we're the largest non-Big Four accounting firm in the southeastern U.S., and Susan has successfully created a culture and is constantly educating, in particular, our younger staff on this concept and this concept of pay it forward.
So they're not coming out of college with this information?
No, they are not. They are not. And, you know, I mean, it's funny. You know, when we elevate somebody from, say, a senior to a manager, we're saying, okay, now it's time for you to start taking on some business
right.
development activity. So go bring in some money. And astonishingly, sometimes that doesn't work as well
really?
As we would like. Yeah, actually. Sometimes you push a bird out of the nest and the wings haven't grown yet and
right.
you get a splat. So she's done a terrific job in terms of educating our staff. Now, it's funny. Everybody in the business community knows who the takers are, right? The takers are the ones who take connections, who take referrals, who take whatever it is you get, and they're just like a black hole. Right. I mean, it was like giving Charles Barkley the basketball. It was never coming out again.
Right.
And you know, there are people out there that are like that. The nature of the business of dealing with people is that they're a walking variable, right? You don't know who they are day to day, you don't know who they are year to year, you don't know who they are at kind of their heart. And so again, to paraphrase Susan, as you build your network, you're going to kiss some frogs along the way
right.
as you find some princes that will be the core of your network. And over time, you simply prioritize who's who. If that taker calls and needs a favor, maybe you'll still do one because you feel like you're doing the right thing, but you're not going to prioritize it over the 18 other people
right.
who you feel there's more of a bilateral relationship going on there.
So before we let you go, please share with us, if you will, a piece of advice, a piece of counsel for those aspiring networkers, the people that want to do a really good job with it. What's one thing that they should do?
I think the best thing you can do is approach it from a mindset of how do you help somebody else, right? If you think about it from how is this person going to help me, you're dead. It's not going to be sincere. It's not going to work. It's going to be phony and fake, and you're going to be that guy. And Atlanta's a town where you don't want to be that guy because everybody knows who that guy is. I sound like Frank Caliendo. Now, here's a guy, who's that guy. But on the other hand, make sure right up front you're asking the question. Or if you talk to somebody new, you talk to somebody that's been a friend for a long time, what can I do to help you? And that's endearing. It's engaging. And I find it empowering also. I don't want to beg people for stuff all the time.
Right.
Right? But on the other hand, if I'm just sort of out there saying, hey, whatever you need, man, I got a Rolodex, I got some resources, I got these guys who run this, you know, internet radio show, I know a labor attorney that can take care of your little HR problem. You know, that to me, that allows me to be in the marketplace in a much more powerful place.
So you need people with more skills they learned in kindergarten than they did in MBA school?
Yes. As a matter of fact, as an MBA, I will say that. I probably got more ROI out of my kindergarten education than I did the MBA. In fact, I got to show you my online collection of finger paints. That'll be awesome.
That'll be good.
Well, that's a great way to summarize the advice. Well, I can see why you've been nominated, and it's been a real pleasure having you come in, man. It's always fun when you come visit. Don't be a stranger. We got to get you back again sometime, man.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Hey, how about hanging out with us? We got one more guest we want to talk to, incidentally. Well, another nominated connector.
Let's
yes,
absolutely. His website stuff. So.
Well, no, he doesn't care about him. It's
sorry.
All about the other
sorry,
person.
How can I help you?
Sorry, Brian.
The website to go to, everybody, is businessradiox.com.
Thanks.
All kidding aside, Lee's right. How can people reach out to you?
Best way to reach out to me is Startup Lounge's website, www.startuplounge.com. My personal website, unblakeable.com, and my Twitter handle is @unblakeable.
I like that. We got to get the story on Unblakeable next time around. Well, thanks again. It really has been a real pleasure, man.
Thank you.
All right, Lee, we got one more. I'm about worn out. We're not used to working this hard.
I know. This is a full day for us.
But yet another nominated connector for Atlanta's Best Connector Series that we have. She's with the Peachtree Financial Group, a wealth manager with that outfit, Mrs. Faye Van Treese. Welcome to the show, Faye.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so you've been sitting there very politely, very quietly, as we've interviewed our other two guests. And now it's time to talk to you a little bit.
That's right. She only got here a few years ago, right, Faye? You're not a native.
No, I'm not. Actually, I've only lived in Atlanta for about 7 years. And when I moved down here, I knew about five people. I had switched my career into the financial services industry. And really, you have to go out and meet a lot of people. They don't just hand you clients. And I also found, you know, kind of talking about the Yellow Pages, nobody really goes in the Yellow Pages and says, there's a financial advisor. Let me go call them up and give them all my money. It just doesn't happen that way. The first company that I worked for, the way that they wanted us to do business development was actually go door to door. Yes,
to
hello.
To knock on doors?
Yep.
That's who I want to hand my money to. You guys knocking on my door, right?
Well, there's people that at my former company that would do that for 5 years and basically go out between 7 to 9 hours a day, door-to-door residential and business. I did it the first 5 weeks that I was required to do it, and I was like, I'm not going to build my business this way. Initially, I started off with PowerCore. PowerCore, BNI, these different groups out there are fantastic, and really it gave me this amazing liberal arts degree. I know more about pest control, what attorneys do, CPAs, all of these different areas, and really gave me a lot of value with my clients and when they had services. So if you're a business owner and they needed a new CPA or they needed a house cleaner, whatever, I had a whole bevy of folks that I could refer to those people that I knew.
But was that moving the ball for you in terms of meeting the people of the net worth that you needed to meet?
It was a great start. Some other things that I've done is I helped start the Kiwanis Club in Decatur. I started the Atlanta Independent Women's Network, which is kind of a good old girls networking group.
So you started your own clubs.
You were like,
you know what? These other clubs are nice, but I got to kind of find my own way here. I'm going to make my own stuff.
Absolutely. So the AIWN, we have educational events approximately every 6 weeks. We do speed networking, just a variety of different things. I'm also have started the 100 Club, which is a business-to-business networking group. We meet the first Thursday of every month at Feast in Decatur. Last week, we had over 90 business owners and people that worked in the business-to-business arena. And I kind of act a lot like Bob, who does the net weaving. If you come to my event, I try to find out a couple nuggets of what you do, and then I will take and introduce you to the two or three or four people that you need to meet there so that you get the most bang for the time. I look at it, if you're going to drive through the Atlanta traffic, you might as well meet a couple people that make sense for your business.
So if you know you're going to meet someone, like you find out ahead of time you're going to meet someone like Michael Blake or Ali Cantor, one of these real hot shots around town, is there some sort of preparation that you – how do you prepare for that, or do you just wait till you get there and then go with it?
That's a great question.
I'm 2 to nothing.
That's
– Actually, I love LinkedIn. I love, love, love LinkedIn. Statistically, 40% of the people on LinkedIn are decision makers. About 38% was it one statistic that I read make over $100,000 a year. And when you're looking at only 1% of Americans make over 100 grand, you really meet a lot of great people. But to prepare for, if somebody's introduced me to prepare for that meeting, I will link up with them on LinkedIn. I will also print off their profile to kind of read ahead of time and maybe see some areas that we might have in common so that when we actually sit down, it's like, oh, we both went to Syracuse University or we both, you know, worked at XYZ company. And it just makes that connecting so much easier.
So do you think that people are utilizing LinkedIn properly?
I think a lot of people underutilize it. They don't really see the value. because they haven't put the time into it. Being in the financial services industry, we're very restricted in what we can put on LinkedIn and Facebook. You know, for most of us, you'll just see, you know, I work for XYZ company or Peachtree Financial Group, and it'll only say one or two short little things. We can't have recommendations and a lot of other things. But I think a lot of people really need to be using LinkedIn a lot more. But it's just great with people that I'm really close to and that I trust. There's a way that you can print off all of your LinkedIn contacts. And I'll actually, we'll sit down and kind of go through that where they print off their list as well. And who of those people would we want to introduce to each other?
And it sounds to me like, based on an earlier comment that you made, you have really embraced this idea that Bob Littell espouses about investing time and energy, not so much in, oh boy, I got to meet Terry Stewart, but wow, this Terry Stewart, it was nice meeting her, and wouldn't it be great if I got her connected with Michael Blake? You really do that, and you have found that that has helped you and helped your business as well, yeah?
Absolutely. Well, I look at it, if I've referred you 10 clients over the last 2 years, if somebody needs my services, you might think of me as at least an option when that person needs a service. I really look at it, you know, when you build your community and you connect people to the right people, everybody raises up and everybody's successful, and it really helps everybody have a better outlook for their future.
Well, what I'm hearing in this is that networking for you is not transactional. Like,
no.
You know, I do something for Terry, and then I'm thinking, okay, now it's time for Terry to buy my book or something, right? It's not transactional at all for you, is it?
Not at all. It's very relationship, you know, focused. And just because I've been in so many different organizations and whether it's nonprofit, I've been on several boards, you know, the connections that you make are just so important. And, you know, really coming out there in business, of course, I've got to make money and feed my family, but it really makes me feel happy to know that I've helped somebody else connect with somebody that they need to connect with.
Now, are you seeing that as a shift in the industry? Like, it seems like there's less intrusive advertising nowadays as there is kind of a mindset of relationship building.
I think so. I think things have shifted. I think where in the past a lot of customer service went overseas, you know, for me, I want to know who I'm dealing with. I want to know, you know, who's involved in the company, because I know every dollar I spend has a direct impact on that company's survival. And I think that, you know, we just all need to support each other so that, you know, economically wise, you know, things have been really tough.
Now, you went out, you built your own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so you obviously, you took the initiative, and I think that's great. But for the rest of us who may not be quite that creative, but we want to take full advantage of networking opportunities. I mean, Atlanta, this market, there's so many. You can look in the Atlanta Day calendar thingy bobber or get on the internet. There's going to be somewhere you can go tonight. How do you choose what events to go to and what to do when you get there?
You know, that's, I think you really got to look at.
She almost said that was a good question.
Yeah,
that almost got number. She almost said it.
Well, to me, the way that I really think to be the most effective is you have to pick 2 to 3 minimum different things. And one of those can be like the Power Corps, the BNI. One of those can be like a Rotary or Kiwanis, church, chamber. To me, you've really got to go out and just try a few different things, see what things that you're meeting the right kinds of people for your specific business. And then when you get to an event, make sure that you either have a name tag or something so people can see your name clearly. Make sure you've got enough business cards. After the event, I think it's really important that you send either a handwritten thank you note for meeting with somebody, connect with them on LinkedIn, and then look for ways that you can connect in the future.
So you have a real emphasis on pre and post. There's the event. There's going and doing the networking thing, whether it's something you invested in yourself or you go find. But you put a lot of energy on the front end and the back end.
Well, why else should you go if you're not going to do that? It's just basically you're wasting your time if you don't follow up and have some kind of system to follow up with all those people.
Now, when you go to these events, are you looking for to meet lots of people, or are you looking to meet like one or two good people?
You know, that That's a great question.
Oh, man, there. You got on the now board. I had a shutout going.
Really, it depends on the event. Typically, if I can meet 5 to 7 really great people.
That's success?
That, to me, is success. You know, find some commonality. What do we, you know, is there any ways that we can work together? And if not, if I know some other people, I'd love to connect them with somebody else.
All right. Well, how do we get our listeners connected with you? What's the best way for them to reach out to you?
My direct number is 404-354-1039. And my email is vantrese, V-A-N-T-R-E-E-S-E, at peachtreefg.com.
Now, what if they want to go to some of those events you mentioned, those groups you got?
Well, we actually, on Facebook and LinkedIn, we have Decatur 100 Club. Atlanta Independent Women's Group is www.aiwn-atlanta.org. Or you can just email me again at thevantrese@peachtreefg.com, and I can get you on all sorts of lists.
Well, very nicely done. Terrific job. Thanks for coming and sharing your experience and your wisdom with us. And maybe we'll have you come back with some folks from some of these various groups, and we can get their perspective as well. That might be fun to do sort of like a round table with some of these groups.
That would be great.
Yeah, you'd be up for that?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, until next time, this is Stone Payton, Lee Cantor, our guests this morning, Terry Stewart, Michael Blake, and Faye Vantrese, and everyone here at the Atlanta Business Radio X family, saying we'll see you in the fast lane.